Welcome to Booked, where two guys tell you about the books they're reading. I'm Rob Olson.
And I'm Livia Snedden. I guess first we should talk about this. Can we keep saying where two guys talk about the books they're reading? Because I have some frightening statistics in front of me.
Until we read no books, we can technically say it.
Very true. This is our year in review episode, which is a lot of self-indulgent stuff. We're going to talk about some milestones, some statistics from this past year, and a variety of other topics. But yeah, basically, this is the one where we pat ourselves on the back or are very saddened by some of these statistics. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But ultimately, I do think that we're going to pick our favorite book of 2016 towards the end of this episode. So that might be something you might be interested in staying tuned for, especially if you're one of the four or five authors we reviewed this year, because, you know, your chances get higher.
Pretty high, yeah.
Yeah, the lower number of books we read, the easier it is for you to be in that category.
Yeah, if we're using like a lottery analogy, like your chances of winning this are more like a scratch-off ticket than like... like the Powerball, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Especially because we reviewed a frighteningly low number of books. Anyway, do you want to start off with some statistics now that we've kind of teased how sad our podcast did book reviews this year?
Yeah, I'll just do a quick because we're talking about the books that we've reviewed. We'll just give some stats about how many books we've reviewed, and then maybe we'll play it off of other years, just for a little bit of context. So this year, we did 24 reviews. Now, most of those are novels, but we did a frighteningly large number of novella reviews. So six of our reviews were straight up novellas. And then two other reviews were novella collections. So way, way more novellas and novella collections than we've done in the past. But to give you an idea, so 24, is that what I said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in 2015, it was more like, 34, 35.
Mm-hmm.
2014 was about 35. 2013 was more like 40. Mm-hmm. So the number is just continuously going down. 39 in 2012. So yeah, we've definitely, this was our lowest year for, except for 2011, where was when we started. But even that year we did more. And it was like, we started in April.
Yeah, so. we did. So we're heading towards year six of the podcast, and I'm going to just go ahead and say it. It's unlikely we'll be doing only 24 book reviews, because I am saddened by this number. Because you know what that means? I read 24 books this year. Because I think everything I read was for this
podcast. Yeah, you didn't do anything on your own. Yeah, neither did I. So my standing goal of reading for any given year is 10,000 pages. And adding up the number of pages we've reviewed, and this is where the novella reviews really kind of kick us in the nuts. 6,100 pages, 6,098 technically, but even when we're reading stuff, it was like 112, 120, 160 page things. So we weren't even reading like hefty books when we did. It was some of the smaller things.
I'm going to tell you right now, and this may not mean anything to anybody except maybe two people who are listening to this. Novellas are going to take a beating in reviews if I have to read any more novellas. Just saying, if we have to kick off 2017 with some novellas, they better be goddamn good, because I'm dinging them just for being novellas.
Yeah, novellas are going to get the treatment in 2017 that, was it 2 years ago, we embargoed doing anthologies?
Exactly, and you know how many anthologies we did this year?
I should. Like, none. No, we did, you're right, we didn't. We did we did one anthology. The Hyde Hotel.
Oh, that's right, we did do one anthology. That was good, I like the Hyde Hotel.
Yeah. Don't like the guy that edited it, because he doesn't know how to tell someone when he's in fucking Chicago.
Well, you know, that's a whole nother story. Yeah. So, I gotta tell you, man, and you wrote it at the top of our thing, and over the past week at the top of our document, it says 2016 hates us. I'm a little tired of the hatred for a year as if it had anything to do with anything. Like, at first I was like, oh, fuck 2016. Oh, that's kind of clever, you know. Oh, 2016, you know, the memes of 2016, you know, setting everything on fire and, you know, that kind of thing. And now I'm tired of it. I'm bored with it. Like, yeah, there's nothing to indicate. Yeah, there's nothing to indicate that in a few short days, so we're recording this on the 27th, that 5 days from now, anything is going to be any different. Celebrity deaths are probably not going to stop happening.
Well, not altogether.
Do you think they might slow down? Because at this point, I'm pretty sure that celebrities are just, like if they're getting close, they're like, I might as well go in this year because this year is going to go down as like one of the biggest years. Like, it's fashionable to die in 2016 now because you're keeping good company.
To speculate that 2017 will be any different means that I have some weird superstitious belief that the actual year of 2016 has it out for us. And I don't know if I'm willing to commit fully to that notion. But man, fuck, here's the thing. I wrote that just as a quick, you know, off the cuff thing on our document, but like, it has not been a good year, like in many, right. many ways.
Okay. So celebrity deaths, and we could talk about that a little more in depth later, but what kind of bad things did we have in 2016 that were really that terrible?
Outside of deaths?
I mean, outside of the celebrity deaths. I mean, Rob has a whole list of celebrities that have died, and it keeps getting longer by the minute.
I mean, we're actually probably behind it
now. We keep adding names.
Yeah, actually an author that is not on there that needs to be.
Yep, that's correct.
So you're talking about what other things sucked about 2016? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Yeah. You were saying how terrible a year it was.
Trump? Like, do I have to go beyond that?
I mean, ultimately, that's kind of debatable. You know, good. Almost half the country voted for him. So that is a little, that's not like a universally considered bad thing. I know that it is in the circles we run in, but we also have to remember that a good portion of the American public voted for Trump. And for them, this was the good thing.
So, yeah, I'm still going to stick with Trump was an awful thing that happened in 2016. I would say pretty confidently that at least 3/4 of our listenership would agree with that.
Yeah, I think so. Because we don't have a lot of listeners in rural anywhere.
Yeah. Are billionaires, I'm guessing.
All right. Based on our Patreon funds, about terrible things that happened in 2016. I'm going to guess that there are 0 billionaires.
No billionaires. At least not the type that like to support people on Patreon.
No. Well, man, maybe. Listen. Maybe some of our Patreon supporters would be billionaires if they stopped throwing their money away at things like dumb podcasts.
So the one thing I think we shouldn't do is discourage people from.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So I'm going to stick with my guns on Trump.
All right. Okay. I can accept that. What else?
So one of the things that. For me, it doesn't matter, and for actually pretty much everybody, it doesn't matter, except for most likely David James Keaton is heavily affected by the fact that the last VCR ever to be made was produced this year.
You know, I thought I'd heard that, and that just happened a couple months ago, right? I mean, that's a pretty recent. Yeah, I thought I'd heard that, and then I thought, that can't be possible that nobody is producing a VCR. Is it really possible that nobody... Like, you don't think that happened and instantly a company was like, fuck it, there's got to be a market. There's at least one guy that all he'll watch is on VHS. So, you know, they're still making a VCR.
According to the absolutely zero research I did, it's done. But I mean, that's, you're probably right. There's going to be some dickhead who starts up a company making VCRs for like the David James Keatons of the world who have massive VHS cassette collections. For any of our younger listeners who aren't aware, VCR stands for video cassette recorder. Am I correct about that?
That is correct, yes.
And it predates DVD players, DVRs. I'm not pretending like I think that, you know, I think everybody knows what a VCR is, but it's just so fucking old. I can't even remember the last time I owned a VCR.
Do they still make like audio cassette players? Because you would think that would have gone maybe even before the VCR.
I don't think they're even manufactured as part of like car.
Well, no, they haven't been in cars for. Yeah, they haven't been in cars for years, I don't think, but I wonder if someone's still making those. I guess so. Back to my original thought was that eventually someone will either the VCRs will still have to be maintained because there's still that getting your stuff from VHS to digital, and now I'm talking like about transfer, home yeah. movies and stuff, or maybe like rare sport recordings or something. Like maybe you had the 1985 Super Bowl. Record yeah. or something, you know. Some
I did have that recorded. Well, no, I had the Super Bowl Shuffle recorded. Never mind, it's entirely different.
That's not what the Super Bowl was. But let's. When I said 1985, for people who don't know, we both lived in Chicago, and the Chicago Bears won the Super Bowl in 1985, and it was the biggest deal in the world until the Cubs won the World Series in 2016.
Yeah. Hey, there's the fucking silver lining, right?
Silver lining. But, you know, see, so even that, people are like, they haven't won in 108 years. This is amazing. No, it's they somehow defeated the odds by not winning for that long, right? Because there's only like 30 teams. So in theory, to go 108 years without winning, I'm not even sure what we're celebrating.
It's a statistical anomaly that would even happen, yeah. is what you're saying?
Yeah, but at this point, you should have been like, God, what the fuck took so long? Jesus Christ, yeah. Thank God you guys finally won. It shouldn't be like this huge celebration. People, I mean, again, and I'm sure this was national news and maybe even international news, but there were people crying and talking about how they remember their grandfather and how happy their grandfather must be in heaven because he died in 1970 and was hoping he would live to see the World Series, the Cubs win the World Series. It was just kind of a weird thing to celebrate, like being bad for so long.
Did you see, I think the one that I thought was the most extreme was there was a guy who, I think he took like a radio or something out to, it was this old dude who took like a radio or like a little portable, whatever, to the grave of his father and watched the final game of the World Series at his father's grave so he could spend the time, like he could have that moment with his dead father.
Oh, that's just weird. I gotta tell you, here's where I stand on this, and Rob will tell you, I come off as much more cold-hearted on this podcast than I am in real life, but here's what I'm gonna tell you. Your dead relative doesn't know that the Cubs won the World Series, and quite honestly, if they're in heaven or hell or whatever, wherever they go afterwards, they don't care, because they've got more important things on their mind. Second of all, neither of those places, and I know this to be a fact, have Facebook. So if that's how you're sending messages to dead relatives, I got to tell you guys, I hate to be the one to burst your bubble, but they're not getting the messages. There is no Wi-Fi in heaven.
No Wi-Fi in heaven?
Yeah.
Wow. I heard that.
They're strictly analog.
According to the TV show Scream Queens, there's no dinosaurs in hell. So.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So, all right. So Trump, the VCR, what else you got?
Harambe?
The Harambe thing. Here.
Although I think that this is maybe one of the silver linings too. Not that not that Harambe was killed, but like some of the stuff that came from it.
Yeah, I don't know how the internet rallied around dicks out for Harambe. I don't understand how it happened. I'm probably not going to look it up. So if listeners have an idea of how exactly that became like a thing,
the origin of dicks out for Harambe.
Yeah, you can Google that. My Google is tired of looking up really weird shit. So, all I know is, and what happened to that gorilla was terrible. All right, in case anybody doesn't know, and Rob, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Kid somehow climbed into the gorilla pit, and instead of killing the kid, they killed the gorilla, and there was an outrage, right? Because the gorilla was killed because the kid and his parents were stupid.
I can read. So I got some interesting information about Harambe. You ready for this?
Does this have to do with dicks out for Harambe?
Not yet.
I don't know about it. All right.
I have my dick out while I'm talking about it, though, so that's absolutely not true. On May 28th, 2016, a four-year-old boy crawled into the enclosure of the western lowland gorilla Harambe at the Cincinnati Zoo. The gorilla then grasped the child and began dragging him about the enclosure before the Cincinnati Zoo employee fatally shot Harambe with a rifle. That day, YouTuber Maxi uploaded footage of the incident to YouTube, where it gathered upwards of 12.6 million views and 41,000 comments in the next 48 hours. All right, so the dick's out for Harambe, according to knowyourmeme.com, which is, you know, where else would you go?
That sounds like a very reputable source of information.
On July 2nd, 2016, Twitter user Sexual Jumanji, at Sexual Jumanji, posted a selfie photograph in which he is shown pointing a replica firearm at the camera with the caption, "We come in with them dicks out to avenge Harambe." So, after that, dicks out for Harambe was like the rallying cry for support for this murdered gorilla. And I gotta tell you, sucks that this gorilla died. There's no way you could, in that situation, like, there's no way you could say, well, maybe you won't kill the kid. Let's just let this play out. Like, you just can't.
Yeah, you mean you won't, don't kill the gorilla.
Right. Right. They would never just be like, let's wait on killing this gorilla.
Yeah, no, I get it. And it's unfortunate because if you've ever worked with the general public, you'll find that people don't really look after the, not everybody, but a lot of people don't look after their children very well. And, you know, I just walking through the grocery store the other day, I saw this kid. This kid is jumping up and down in the shopping cart. And, like, I wanted to say something because the last thing I want to do is see some, like, four-year-old kid bust their head on the tile in, like, the Jewel Osco. But it's like, you know, I don't know.
That kid was dicks out for Harambe, I bet.
But, yeah, that's okay. I'm not sure that that's
metaphorically, not literally.
Right. All right. So, yeah. So, yeah, the Harambe thing happened. That's true. Zika virus. You have that on here too. Let's be honest. Zika virus only affected people in Florida and really pregnant women. So it has nothing to do with us.
Yeah, that's true. Didn't the Olympics happen this year? 2016. Yeah, in Brazil.
Sure.
They had all that Zika down there. They were giving out condoms all over the place. Like, don't bang a Zika Brazilian lady.
Yeah, well, you know, it's South America. That's who you get for living in South America.
You get Zika?
Apparently. Yeah. And Florida, for some reason, is the other place that a lot of Zika happens.
That's where, if you're wearing a bikini, maybe it's transmitted by a bikini, because isn't Brazil all, like, super, like, tropical and shit?
In my mind, yes, every woman in Brazil is wearing a bikini. That is how I see it.
Well, there you go. That's the connection. So there was, I mean, there's things in addition to the dead celebrities. We're going to have to go through the list at some point during this episode, but, there was things. Harambe, VCR dead, Trump.
Okay. 2016. That's a wrap. why don't we talk about something good? So Rob and I have each picked our three favorite books for this year. Now, when I say that, we're not going to call this a best of 2016 list or whatever, because clearly we didn't read any of the books in 2016. There's 24 of them. But of those 24, some have risen to the top of the pile. So, Rob, would you like to share maybe what your and I guess we have to do, is this going to be in some particular order? I think it should be in some particular order. How about your third favorite book of 2016?
I would love to tell you my third favorite book of 2016. So, just for the record, I did give a staggeringly large number of books 5 stars. Like 11 of them?
Percentage-wise, yeah, like all of
them. That's like half the books I gave 5 stars. Yeah. So there was a lot to choose from, and some of them were collections, some were novellas. So I kind of weighted this toward full novels, which were my favorites for the year. And my third favorite is going to be Liar, the memoir by Rob Roberge. That shit was just really... It was interesting because we know him, and this is like a look at just how, you know, scary and fucked up of a life he's had. And so it had like this extra resonance because if you remember, if you listened to that episode, there were parts of that book that we... like we're interacting with him while that shit was going on. So it was like, whoa, this is really crazy. So, first of all, Rob's is an incredible writer. And on top of it, there was that, that kind of angle that most people probably didn't read this from, where it's like, oh yeah, I remember when that happened. So for me, it was just a very significant book for the year.
All right. You know, Rob said he kind of focused on long form fiction, but apparently, because we read so much not long form fiction, my number three of the year was, and I think a lot of this had to do with not just because I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But the interaction, how this whole thing came together, I Can Taste the Blood. And that's from Malerman, Taff, Stone, Schwartz, and Johnson. It's five novellas, all of them with the title I Can Taste the Blood. I think that our interaction with those guys maybe played a little bit into. I had a really hard time picking a number three. Like, Rob and I were talking, and he's like, yeah, I think I've got it. And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, well, I need your number three. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what my number three is in looking at the list. So, definitely an interesting take, not necessarily the first time I've seen something along these lines. I think I mentioned during that episode that there's a book that Richard Layman participated in where all of them started with the same line and kind of took, you know, their stories in their own directions and stuff. So, but definitely a very fun and wild ride. I Could Taste the Blood, Livius, is number three for 2016.
All right. That episode was insane, and editing it was a goddamn nightmare. I'm going to tell you that much.
Yeah, and again, that gets extra points for me because Rob had a hard time editing it.
No, I mean, I'm good at it. It just was a nightmare.
All right. While we're talking about stuff we did in 2016, we talked about how many books we did. We only did five interview episodes this year, but we interviewed 10 authors, which I'm perplexed. The math is not working out for me. How did this happen?
There was the Soul Standard. We did two. There was four authors. We did two different episodes, two per episode.
Okay, so two squared. Okay.
The I Can Taste the Blood mega interview had four authors in one interview, all two at the same
squared,
time.
Two squared plus four equals... No, wait, that's still not right.
Separately, we interviewed S.G. Brown and Jeffrey Craner.
All right, I can't do the math anymore. If somebody could figure that out in a mathematical form, I'd appreciate it. That does sound like 10, though, because I got all my fingers are used up now.
Yeah, and you have all your fingers.
Yes, I do, still.
Yeah.
So we did five interview episodes, 10 authors. Great interviews, too. The I Can Taste the Blood was a whole lot of fun. Talking to the guys from the Soul Standard, you know, that takes us back to... Man, we were looking forward to that for 5 years, since we first started the podcast. So it was great. It was great to have those guys on, Nick Corp and Caleb Ross, who is no longer writing. And we found out during that those particular interviews that everybody's very happy about that. Richard Thomas and Axel Tayari, all longtime friends of the podcast. It was great to get together with them.
Yeah, excellent interviews this year. I think all the interviews we did were just top notch. And they just happened. I like to, so we've interviewed everybody from Soul Standard before, and it's okay going back and interviewing the same people, but you have to have a reason. And so theirs was an exception because there was kind of a greater story around the book. But I just going back and talking to the same people and over again, eventually you're going to run out of stuff to talk about. So I think that the reason we're doing fewer interviews might have something to do with the fact that, like, we've talked to so many authors already. So getting new people like Jeffrey Craner and essentially everybody from I Can Taste the Blood was awesome.
Indeed. And then, of course, S.G. Brown, longtime favorite of this podcast. It was great. It was great to talk to him about his, I don't want to say series of short stories, but the few short stories that he released directly to the Kindle, which were also a ton of fun. Always glad to have that guy on.
Love that guy. I'll talk to him anytime. He could call up right now and it'd be like, well, we're pausing the episode to talk to S.G. Brown.
I'm sure we could incorporate him into the episode. Interludes.
Like, let me share you this doc.
Do you remember when interludes were going to be a once a month thing? We were like, maybe once a month, maybe every 6 weeks we take a break from reading and we do an interlude. Yeah. This year there were 16 interlude episodes.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of interlude episodes. Now, that also included the two-part holiday office party, which was going to be one episode, but then we figured out it was going to be 3.5 hours and didn't play well.
Right.
Yeah. See, here's what happens. You get around, like, around October, the spooktacular, that, and we start getting notifications that we've uploaded, like, near our, like, limit of uploading megabytes of sound files. Because you wind up with dumb 3.5 hour episodes, but, a whole lot of fun in our holiday specials and our interludes in general, but those are always great. And I have the feeling that some of you, and I say this very specifically, some of you may be hearing a few more of those in the coming year.
Was it a teaser, or are we going to talk more about that concept?
Well, you know, let's you know what the fuck. At some point, we're going to look forward to what's coming up in 2017, right? Let's go ahead and talk about this one now.
Yeah. So, it has become clear, especially over the last, so we've been doing Halloween episodes for longer than the Christmas episodes, but like, so this is our third year of doing Spooktacular and the Christmas extravaganza thing. Holiday office party is what we're going to call it from now on. And it's just become so clear that those are so much fun to record, and they're so much fun to listen to, that, we were joking that we need to find other holidays to record episodes for. And so the idea was like, well, what other holidays could we use? Easter, 4th of July, St. Patrick's Day, you know, we just find, you know, probably not
Vlad Tepish's birthday.
Yeah, that one.
I don't remember whose idea that was. Do you remember? I don't know, somebody's.
I don't remember that even happening. Was I drunk?
you were drunk the whole time. You're always drunk. Haven't we decided this already?
So, the idea is just ramping up the number of holiday episodes that we do in a year with a catch. The catch is, aside from the spooktacular and the holiday office party, our holiday episodes will become Patreon exclusive episodes. So if you want to catch our potential St. Patrick's Day, 4th of July, Vlad whatever birthday episodes, you'd have to be a contributor on Patreon, but at not some arm and a leg cost. You know, it'll be one of the lower tier rewards, but just using that as a way to get more people involved with Patreon and to allow us to have way more fun.
I got to tell you, the holiday office party, if you haven't listened, this could only be the only follow up to that. If this wasn't the year in review, would be that this is the hangover.
Yeah.
Like, we're four really drunk people talking a lot of stupid shit for 3.5-ish hours. And the buildup. So here's the beauty of it. The buildup to that was hundreds and hundreds of instant messages. And hundreds more after the fact. And as a matter of fact, even today I found something that I sent to the group that kind of related back to the holiday episode. So yeah, we have a lot of fun doing them. We hope you have a lot of fun listening to them. And we hope that you want to hear more of them in Patreon exclusives. I mean, you know, some people celebrate Groundhog's Day, Rob. I don't know. There could be something coming up in the
new future. I've already got Groundhog Day content in my mind right now. I've got Valentine's Day content. We could go.
Apparently, yes. Yeah, so twice a month, we're going to have holiday episodes.
Martin Luther King Day.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Fucking Casimir Pulaski Day. Get like, right? Chicago? Casimir Pulaski Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nobody else knows who that is.
So, yes. Holiday episodes. Hopefully, we'll be able to make those more common and make those a benefit for our Patreon contributors. What else we got?
I don't know. If we read more books, we may have more spoiler episodes too, more spoiler talk.
Yeah.
A lot of spoiler talk this year. It didn't even make a statistic. There's no statistic for the number of spoiler talks. I'm thinking it was like 5.
We were hitting it heavier toward the second half of the year, I think, but yeah, maybe 5 or 6 or something like that.
Any rate, do you want to talk? Do you want to go back and talk about another favorite book of 2016?
Love to. Can I give my second?
Yes. Yes, please do.
Second favorite book, 2016, hands down, Disappearance at Devil's Rock by Paul Tremblay. I just love that guy's stuff.
Paul is Paul is a spectacular writer and just an all around great guy. You know, here's what I want you to think. I know it sounds like we talk about people say they're all really great guys or whatever, but just think about the ones we don't talk about, because we don't say like that guy's an asshole. Like we try not to mention them. We just don't mention what a great guy they are. So if you heard us talk about somebody and we didn't say they're a great guy, chances are, you know.
I'm going to leave it at that. love that book, Disappearance of Devil's Rock. And it's weird because Paul's been writing for a long time, and I feel like Head Full of Ghosts and Disappearance in Devil's Rock are like different. Like they stand apart from the other work that I've read of his in a way. Mm-hmm. Like it's a newer voice or a fully recognized realized voice or something like that. But man, he is just killing it right now. And I couldn't be happier for him. Like he's just the nicest guy.
I agree wholeheartedly.
What's your number two, Boo?
All right. So my number two, I had a lot of trouble picking number three. I also had a lot of trouble picking number two. But I say this because there were two that I really were kind of tied for the top for me. So, this is where, you know, I always complain that novellas are too short.
Yep.
This is my payback because this book could have been number one. But I wound up deciding, kind of, you said you were going long form. That was the deciding factor because this was a novella. I was dinging it down to number two. A House at the Bottom of a Lake by Josh Malerman. What a fantastic story in that. Horror, we argued a little bit, not argued, but discussed about how I wasn't really sure that most of it was horror or not. But I still overall love the feel of that book. I think that he was able to tell several different stories in a very short span, being that it was a novella. Do you remember roughly what the page count was? It was like 80, maybe?
No, it was over 100, but not much.
Yeah, so very, very short, but definitely well worth your time and effort. All right, and then I have to do this because I used to hate it. Remember when you tell a guest, hey, can you tell us one book, and they give you a list of like 14? Also, we're going to call a very, very honorable mention for They Don't Come Home Anymore, which I really, really liked a whole lot, too, now that we're talking about novellas. Both from This Is Horror, and I want you to understand, This Is Horror pays us nothing for these reviews. We do get free books, and Michael Wilson's okay.
He's okay.
Yeah. So I just want to throw that in there as an extra, like, 2.5 spot.
I'm judging you so hard right now for doing that.
I know.
All right, so stay tuned for our number one books of the year, and we'll see if they match up or not.
All right, you ready to start talking about celebrity deaths?
I can't wait. This is all I've been thinking about since we since we decided today was going to be the day that we record this. All I've been thinking about is talking about all these dead celebrities.
Well, let me let you get started then.
So what do you think the best approach? Are we going to talk about all... So let's kind of eliminate some of the less... Let's do this. There's, like, less impactful ones. Some of them are political. Some of them are just, like, big names that really don't have anything personal for us. I'm feeling that we're probably going to feel the same way. Like, but there are significant names. Like, Janet Reno died, and that's big. But I don't really have any kind of personal...
The biggest thing about Janet Reno dying is that she said that Donald Trump would never be president while she was alive, and she fucking dropped dead days before the election.
She fucking knew, man.
Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't think that's how she meant it, but clearly she was onto something, so... there's a significant list, and I'm curious, though, if you could tell me this.
Yeah.
When you said, hey, I've got a list of dead celebrities.
Yeah.
You said, I took some off the list because I don't think you'd know who they were.
Yep.
Here's what I would like to do. Do you have the original list? Because I'd like to play, do I know these people or not?
So here is where I found my official list. I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you go to Wikipedia and you just type in a year, it'll tell you, here's the type of information you can get. Significant events. Births, deaths, the Nobel Prize winners for the year. When the movie appears in fiction is another one. And then some other stuff. So I went to this and I was like, let's just see who died. Because I'm morbidly interested in this. So I did remove a few from the list that I didn't think that you would recognize, and here's some of them. So
I'm gonna give it a yes if I know who that person is, and a no if I don't. So let's do this and see how accurate you are.
All right. So the first one, this is gonna be a little telling. From the name Amber Rain, does it sound familiar at all?
I believe Amber Rain is a porn star.
Ding, ding, ding. Wow, good job.
So, there you go.
Another one. Okay, so here's another one is, I'll just say the name. Tell me if you know who it is. Anton Yelchin?
No.
He is the young guy who, wow, he was born in 1989. That's really young. He played Chekhov in the new Star Trek movies.
You know, I did not know that name, but he died. I can tell you how he died. He got hit by his own SUV. He got pinned to like a gate or something, right? Didn't he have a faulty?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that, yeah, I'm almost positive. So no, I would not have known him by name, but knowing cause of death.
Hey, that counts.
Yeah.
Honorable mention, the Queen Anne of Romania died. I'm not sure if you knew that.
I know my Romanian royalty. Thank you very much.
Okay. I was making sure. It was popped up and I was like, here's a name. Let's see if you know this name. Ron Glass.
You know, everything in me wants to say professional wrestler. But I don't think that's right.
No, we'll get to the professional wrestlers eventually, but...
Ron Glass, though, is an African-American guy, right?
Yes.
All right. I don't know why I know that.
Did you just... You're not Googling this? You just brought this
no,
up?
No, I swear... Listen, I honestly, I'm flipping through Facebook on my phone while we're doing this.
He is an actor who... I'm going to see if I can find anything that you may have seen him in. He was in, the reason I know him is from the TV show Firefly.
Oh, I actually, now that you say that, I do know who you're talking about. The black guy from Firefly.
Yeah, it was Shepherd Book.
Yep. Yeah. I saw one episode of that. So yeah, I do know who you're talking about, but no, I had no idea that's who he was. Yeah.
There's something that he was like really well known for. It was like Barney Miller or something, like a show from like.
Oh God. Yeah. Cause him and Abe Vigoda are both dead.
Yeah, Abe Vigoda. I didn't put Abe Vigoda in there, but yeah, that was another one that, yeah. But yeah, I think he was in Barney Miller. Yeah, he was Detective Ron Harris from Barney Miller.
Yep. But like when the cast of Barney Miller starts dropping off, I mean, that show's 42 years old, right? It's like 1975.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't be surprising.
I'm not saying, right, I get it. I'm not saying that it's unnatural or unexpected, but he's a significant person. Those were the few that I redacted because I didn't think that they were mainstream enough for you, basically. Gotcha. But then, okay, so Janet Reno, Nancy Reagan, whatever, she was, you know, super old.
She was elderly, yeah.
Fidel Castro, he was super old. Smoking those cigars all the time, I'm guessing.
I am looking at this list, though, and I do have to say, who is Rob Ford? Rob Ford?
Rob Ford was, like, the coked-out mayor of, like, Toronto.
Oh, okay. I do know that. Has he died? I'm guessing he died since he's on this list.
Homeboy is super dead.
All right.
Yeah.
Drug overdose? Heart attack?
Ooh, good question. I don't know. Continue looking at the list, and I'll see if I can find a...
I'd also, so Henry Heimlich, I have to imagine he's just the Heimlich maneuver guy, right?
Yeah, that's the guy that, and here's the thing, like, he died.
Or a Nazi.
What?
Or a Nazi.
Yeah,
last surviving member of Hitler's cabinet.
No, just, just a regular old guy who created the Heimlich maneuver. He did die from, a coronary condition, I believe. Okay, so it's nothing to do with choking.
All right, see, not from choking on something, that's good.
Oh man, I don't have Rob Ford's, I think he had cancer.
Okay.
Maybe. Anyway. Yeah. So good old Rob Ford.
And then of course, just this last couple of days, George Michael and Carrie Fisher.
Gotta tell you, George Michael, that hit me pretty hard.
Now, we just talked during the holiday office party about how Last Christmas is your favorite Christmas song. So that you know, people will say, you know, because a lot of times you get, this is what happens, right? I saw everybody today. Oh, okay, it's such a loss. Carrie Fisher. These people don't, they never talk about Star Wars. They never, you know what I mean? But you understand what I'm saying, right? Like, once somebody dies, like, it's, you get those people that do that thing. Like, if it's a, if it's someone like at work or whatever, all of a sudden everybody that was their best friend kind of thing, that seems to happen. Celebrity deaths a lot too. And Carrie Fisher, man, the outpouring today was ridiculous from somebody who, if it wasn't for the new Star Wars movie, would have gotten zero mentions year round on, you know, on any average year. So
I'm very sad like
about Carrie Fisher.
I feel like that one specifically, there's a lot of people who are just posturing like, oh, she was amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, and like, everybody's putting up pictures of Princess Leia and stuff like that. I took a little bit of a different direction in memorializing Carrie Fisher. I did two specific things. I put up a picture of her from the Blues Brothers. Did you recognize that? Did you see that on Facebook?
I saw that. I don't really remember the Blues Brothers very well.
Dude, I watched it like this year.
My 7th grade or maybe 8th grade art teacher is an extra in that.
Nice.
Yeah.
We all have, Chicago. Yeah. Anybody, that's the thing I was about to say, is like anybody who has family or grew up in the Chicagoland area when that was being filmed, everybody's got a fucking story about that movie because that was like the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing I did, and you may not know this, I put a picture up of Billie Lord, who plays Chanel No. 3 in Scream Queens. Mm-hmm. And it's a quote from one of her episodes of Scream Queens where it says, "Believe me when I say that if it was possible for me to feel anything, I would totally be crying right now." And I put that up because she is Carrie Fisher's daughter.
Oh, I did see that. It didn't make any sense to me, but now it makes very much sense.
Yeah. So that was my memorial for Carrie Fisher.
Do you have, I don't even know if this is an appropriate question to ask, do you have a death that saddened you the most this year? Celebrity death?
I wish I could say Prince, because that seems like that would be the one that everybody really had some deep feeling for. Mm-hmm. I would be totally frontin' if I pretended like I was a big, deep, you know, Prince fan or David Bowie, because I appreciated them both as artists, but like, I recognize those were probably the two hardest hitting of the year. David Bowie and Prince were very significant, but I don't have enough of a connection to either one of them. Realistically, I don't know. Maybe this is where we discover that. Livius was earlier saying how he sounds so heartless on the podcast, but it's very obvious if you ever meet us in person that he's the one who actually has a heart and I'm the heartless one. I don't really have anything specifically. Although Carrie Fisher, I was feeling really down about today. That kind of sucks. And I joke about George Michael, but like, man, can I tell you I have a theory about two of his songs?
Please do. I've been looking. You teased this theory before we got on the podcast. So, yeah, I'm very interested to hear this.
So over the past few years, I've been obsessing about two specific George Michael songs. And it started out with just like, so Careless Whisper is, you're familiar with Careless Whisper, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I'm never going to dance again. Guilty Feet, Got No Rhythm, all that stuff. It's that lame saxophone at the beginning is just kind of, it's cheesy enough where I was like, man, I'm just going to listen to this song. And then I like listen to it way more than I should. And I was like, man, this really good. This guy really has, dancing has significance for this person in this song, which is so foreign to me, but dancing is like the theme of this song. Well, the theme of this song is deeper meaning and everything, but dancing comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I'm tooling around playing the different like George Michael stuff in Wham's song "Wake Me Up Before You Go Go." You're familiar?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's really my time for music. I was never a huge Wham fan, but I mean, yeah, that's definitely falls into my era.
Right. Your frame of reference.
Yep.
If you think about that song, this guy's pissed off because his friends went out dancing and left him sleeping at home. So there's another big Wham song that has that is fundamentally focused around dancing. So I've been obsessing about, like, why does this guy care so much about dancing? And I don't even think the fact that he's gay really explains his like, you know, love of dancing so much. I don't think it's a, you could stereotype him as being like, oh, he's gay, he loves dancing. I think it goes deeper. But then it just happened recently. Actually, when we went to IHOP Christmas the other night, I was driving there. George Michael had just died. I was listening to George Michael on the way over to see some friends for Christmas at the IHOP, because that's what we do. And I had Pagans. A theory. What's that?
Pagans.
Well, you do what you do. But anyway, I had a theory. A theory crystallized in my mind, and I want to throw this at you and see what you think. So in Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, homeboy gets ditched, and people go out dancing without him, right?
Yes, I believe that's accurate.
Careless Whisper, never gonna dance again. These guilty feet have got no rhythm. There's another line that says, should have known better than to cheat a friend. I'm thinking, Careless Whisper is the person who went out without the friend feels bad for ditching this friend. Okay. And going out dancing without them. So it's like, it's kind of like how historically in classic rock, the song Layla is about Eric Clapton wanting to bang George Harrison's wife. And George Harrison wrote the song While My Guitar Gently Weeps about how Eric Clapton was banging his wife. So I think this is the same thing. They're like, the songs are answers to each other.
I would like to say that I had no idea about that other thing you were just talking about Eric Clapton, George Harrison. Secondly, I would like to say that I can see why you would have that theory. But I got to tell you, man, I've ditched friends before. Like, the fucking Careless Whisper, that guy feels really fucking terrible. Like, yes. Very, very terrible. Like, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go is kind of like a fun song. I understand that he's kind of mad, but you know what I mean? It's this really kind of like upbeat song about getting blown off.
Yeah.
Where Careless Whisper is nearly suicidal over how he treated his friend who he left at home and went dancing without him.
Well, and I think I understand your objection, but I'm going to double down on this, because who would fucking care about dancing enough to make the Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go song? That's someone who really cares about dancing. And so it would make sense that it was significant enough for that person to make the other person feel bad enough to write Careless Whisper.
Sadly, Rob, if you would have cared enough to make this connection just even months ago, we may have gotten an answer.
Yeah, I know. We got to find
the other guy from Wham.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think he actually changed his name to that because it was easier for people to identify him.
Yep.
So that's my theory. He says that on his driver's license because people are like, hey, are you the other guy from Wham?
He's like, pulls up. Why, yes, I am.
Yeah. Is he still alive?
I don't know. He's not on my list. So he didn't die this year.
Yeah. I'm just surprised because, and I guess I haven't watched any TV, but you know, that's the first thing that happens when Prince died, who easily I'm saddest about that. Having been a longtime fan of Prince, that definitely broke my heart. But, you know, the first thing you saw was like Sheila E. and Morris Day, like on the interview circuit.
Yeah.
So you would think.
Oh, so I see what you're saying. Like you didn't see the other guy from Wham.
Yeah, not yet. So if he's not on, like, Good Morning America, like, 2020 this week, then you know either he's dead or they had some significant... or he went dancing without George Michael.
Andrew Ridgely is still alive.
That sounds right, though. When you said that, I said that felt like the right guy. So are you of the belief that this year has taken more celebrities than any other year? Are you in this league of people who feels like this has been the worst celebrity death year ever kind of thing?
Based entirely on the fact that you're not going to do any research to prove me wrong, yes.
All right. Somebody did some research, and this not to say that this isn't the worst celebrity death year or anything like that. But there is an interesting theory, and I was actually talking about this at work today, I think. Recently I was talking about how I think a lot of this has to do with social media and how we get information. So now think about it this way. In the 70s, if a celebrity died and you weren't watching one of the three channels that you had access to at the time the news was on, or you didn't pick up a newspaper, chances are you didn't find out for years someone was dead until you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, part of it was that
the what do you mean Clark Gable's dead?
Yeah. The information is instant. Like somebody dies and sometimes we know before the body's even been picked up. Like that's how quickly information travels. Second of all, somebody dies who's even a mild celebrity and the entirety of your social media, everybody shares the information to the same group of people, basically. Mm-hmm. So you see this over and over and over and over again. So it really gets drilled in your head that person died. There was a study done by somebody, I think they were British. A study conducted by the BBC cites similar results of an increase in celebrity deaths and suggests that it tracks with the evolution of mass communication. The author of the study, Charlotte McDonald, explains that this is partially a result of the half a century on from the flourishing of both TV and pop culture in the 1960s, which massively expanded the overall pool of public figures. They're saying is not my social media theory, but the fact that in the 60s is when we started to get TV shows. Because who was really a celebrity before that? A politician or maybe a guy whose record album you had? And yeah, there are fewer celebrities. But because of TV and movies, and as we continue to add avenues, you know, I just mentioned before, you know, there were six TV stations that you can watch when I was a kid. And now there's 400 TV stations on everybody's television.
Yeah, now you can be just famous on Instagram or YouTube.
Right, right. Well, so that's what's going to going to be next, actually. And I was going to say that that's what will happen is that your Instagram celebrities will start dropping dead in 15 or 20 years. And everybody's going to be like, I can't think of one right now. But
PewDiePie died. Shit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's not an avenue that we had 20 years ago to have even more celebrities. But that basically that we created more celebrities by the explosion of mass media. So, of course, more celebrities are dying than they used to because there are more celebrities. And a lot of them who became popular in the 60s and 70s. And as you look at that list, you've got David Bowie, Alan Rickman, Glenn Frey, you know, Nancy Reagan, again, from an earlier era, I guess. But Merle Haggard, Muhammad Ali, Gene Wilder. These are people who came up in the 70s. That's when they gained their fame, 70s or earlier. So half that list is, how do I say this, people that
new celebrity.
We only knew of because they were celebrities when it became easier to be a celebrity because of mass media.
Yeah.
So it's going to get worse before it gets better because the expansion of celebrity is just that.
Yeah, but did I tell you, have I ever told you my theory of tribalism?
No.
So we can cut this out if it ends up being super boring, but I have an idea where I feel like the next evolution of this is with from when the internet became a household necessity going forward, this kind of phenomenon grew even like bigger to the point where you can be a celebrity to a very specific group of people where other people have never heard of you, but you still, you know, experience a level of celebrity or fame. And so I think that with the internet being basically limitless, people can find their group of people that cares about this thing that like is not a mainstream thing. So we're basically becoming little tribes of passions, and you can be famous within this tribe even though like someone over here has no idea who you are. So I think that the thing that's going to counteract the TV and everything that you said, making more celebrities, is the fact that the celebrities of the future are going to be so specific that they're not going to be universal.
Decentralized celebrities. That's very interesting. Yeah. And I know exactly what you mean. I have on occasion referred to somebody as a vape celebrity.
Exactly. That's a perfect example.
Like, what the fuck do you mean? I'm like, the guy's got 750,000 followers on YouTube, which is significant because there are some names you can drop to anybody who, you know, maybe doesn't just vape, but maybe, you know, actually read some stuff online about it, and they'll know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, like I mentioned. Exactly, and like I mentioned PewDiePie earlier. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I have no idea.
Exactly, and I don't either, but this is someone who is, like, famous on YouTube for, I think, playing video games, maybe? So the people that are outside of that video game world would never know who this person is unless they were really dialed into the idea of pop culture and celebrity in general. So I think that tribalization is going to cut down on, like, a universal celebrity, and it's going to make it so that the celebrities are much more, you know, specific to what your passions are.
That's very interesting. Yeah, and I mean, you know, we started seeing that a little bit with social media. I think you and I talked about it probably on the podcast about, you know, echo chambers, kind of the same thing. You know, you surround yourself with the people that believe the things you believe, and now you think that everybody believes that because you refuse to participate in anybody else's conversation. So,
and it can even happen with us. Like, if I said, if on the podcast we were like, China Mieville died, that would be a huge thing to talk about in the book world. But my neighbor would be like, who fucking cares? Who is that? Is it like a zookeeper or something?
Be like, that wrestler bitch died in 2016. China on the list of celebrity deaths.
I'm pouring one out for China right now.
Yeah, I was sure that China was a dude for maybe like the first 2 years I knew of her as a wrestler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, see, I didn't follow wrestling enough to like really... I knew China was a female wrestler. No context beyond that. I probably, just because of the internet and everything, I think she's also probably equally famous, or her fame transferred over to acting in pornography. Am I right about that?
Yeah, and I think that that became news because she was known for something else. I think whenever you have someone who was in the media for any reason turns to porn, that it becomes... I mean, Paris Hilton is probably more famous after it came out that there was an available sex tape than she was beforehand.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was, I mean, that's how Kim Kardashian is where she is.
That's a good point. Sure, exactly. And that's, that's how it goes. But, I mean, ultimately, I watched some stuff on Muhammad Ali. You know, I was watching a, 2020 or 60 Minutes or something that was covering some of the celebrity deaths. God, I guess I didn't realize how fun it was just to listen to that guy talk.
Muhammad Ali, like with the confidence and the bravado that he had.
And he was overly full. I mean, he was something else, but he just, the ease with which he would kind of flaunt his stuff was pretty amazing. So
he had the moves to back it up, bro.
Yep. And then Leonard Cohen, you know, this is what saddens me. I've wanted to listen to more of Leonard Cohen's music because I'm a huge fan of Hallelujah, which I believe may officially be the song that's been covered more times than any other song ever. Yeah. I don't have the statistics to back it up.
if not before 2016, then definitely after.
I was thinking about this. I am pretty sure that that song or a version of that song has been in every TV show I've ever watched. So I'm telling you, if there's a statistic for song that has appeared in more TV shows, if you took out like Happy Birthday, you know, maybe, Jingle Bells or something where, you know, pops up on every single holiday episode, that is probably the most used song ever in TV shows. I think it's probably one of the top 10 songs ever written. So very sad to see him go for at least for his contribution to that, for writing one of the greatest songs ever written.
Yeah. I wish I knew more about Leonard Cohen to properly, I don't know anything about any of these celebrities. I'm just going to come out and say it now. Gene Wilder was in movies.
Really? See, and I thought you would be more familiar with his back catalog because he was in a ton of comedy movies.
Yeah, he did a lot of those Mel Brooks movies, and I hate Mel Brooks movies, but I know...
He did a bunch of stuff with Richard Pryor, and he was Willy Wonka. I mean,
he did that See No Evil, Hear No Evil, right? With Richard Pryor. One of them was deaf, or one was deaf and one was blind, anyway.
Was that what it was called?
I don't know.
All right. Maybe not. Yes, he did do that. I don't think that's what that movie was called, but yeah.
So I'm just going to run. Do you want to just kill the list and move on? Kill the list? I guess that was a bad way to say it.
Yes.
I'll run down the list. So this is the list of all the significant celebrities that I found and recognized on Wikipedia as of December 27th when we're recording this. Still a few days for someone to drop fucking dead. David Bowie, and this is chronologically. Alan Rickman, probably, honestly, if there was one that I cared about more than any other, is Alan Rickman. That guy was just... fucking stellar actor. Glenn Frey from The Eagles?
Yes.
A couple authors coming up. Umberto Eco. What are some significant titles from...
The Name of the Rose?
Yeah. Yeah. Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird. And that farce of weird shit that her lawyer forced out after that made a big stir. Was it this year or last year?
I think that was this year. What was it called? Even More Mockingbirds
Get Killed? Mockingbirder. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that book killed Harper Lee. Nancy Reagan, Rob Ford, who we figured out who Rob Ford was, which, I mean, there's videos. There's so many excellent videos of Rob Ford just being the biggest piece of shit. Gary Shandling, Merle Haggard, China, Prince, Muhammad Ali, Gene Wilder, Arnold Palmer. He invented that drink, right, where it's half tea and half lemonade?
That's what he was known for.
Leonard Cohen, Janet Reno, Florence Henderson of the Golden Girls, correct?
No, you were making that up, right?
I don't know who Florence Henderson is.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
The Brady Bunch. She was America's mom, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll be damned. Yeah, that's who I meant. That's definitely what I meant.
Crap, I thought
I'm too young for this shit. No, I have no idea who I'm talking about. Yeah, Carol Brady of the Brady Bunch. Sorry about that. Fidel Castro, he invented cigars. John Glenn, astronaut. Alan Thicke, he had a son who made that booby video song.
Did you ever watch Growing Pains?
I did. I definitely did.
Too. I watched a lot of Growing Pains when I was younger. Yeah.
Henry Heimlich, inventor of the maneuver. Zsa Zsa Gabor, inventor of having two names. What would you say Zsa Zsa Gabor was most famous for?
Green Acres, but she was Miss Hungary in like 1939.
Good Lord, seriously?
Was it Zsa Zsa Gabor? Was she in Green Acres or was it her sister?
Oh, was it Ava Gabor? Did I get this right?
No, Zsa Zsa Gabor died.
I know. I'm trying to think of the other Gabor name.
Yeah, it's Ava Gabor, but I'm trying to remember which one was in Green Acres.
Well, I'm going to the internet to see if we can find out.
We're so prepared.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yeah, she wasn't. I don't think she was in Green Acres.
She was born in 1917 in Budapest.
Dude, like 1939. She was, 1936.
Miss Hungary, 1936.
Yeah, 1936. She was Miss Hungary.
Which, that proves to me tonight that Hungary existed back in 1936.
Yeah, that's very true.
And then George Michael, Carrie Fisher, and whoever comes in the next, like, 3 days.
The guy who wrote Watership Down.
The guy who wrote Watership Down.
But he was, like, 96, too. Zsa Zsa Gabor was, like, 99.
Yeah, they're old as hell. So, like, that's the thing. A lot of these people were just eventually going to die.
Of them were past their expiration date.
Zsa Zsa, you think Zsa Zsa shouldn't have lasted this long?
Dude, yeah. Yes, that's exactly what I think.
All right.
I think once you're past 90 that it's fully acceptable. And I don't even know that it's really that I consider it sad anymore. Because I don't know what her quality of life was at 99. Yeah. I have to imagine it wasn't high.
There's a quality of life situation. Man, sometimes you gotta be like, that was their time. When you're in like your weird 90s or like you have failing health, you can't be like it was a tragedy. You could be like, well, they're probably better off.
Well, and sometimes those people are resolved to go too. I mean, like, you know, we don't know what Zsa Zsa Gabor's state of mind was, but maybe she was like, oh, God, it's time. It's been past time. Like
she was like, it's almost 100 years since I was Miss Hungary.
Dude, I don't know what's more impressive, that she was Miss Hungary in 1939 or that 1939 Hungary was like, you know what, we need a Miss Hungary.
Yeah, that was a different time. That was a different time.
I thought Donald Trump invented those pageants.
Yeah. So what else we got? We're done with the dead celebrities. I can put the dead celebrities to rest, right?
Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap up our favorite books of the year, and then maybe we'll do a little bit of looking forward to 2017.
All right. I think we're going to agree on this last one.
Yeah, we agree on this last one, which kind of universally makes it Booked's favorite book of the year.
This is going to be the Booked novel of the year. Stephen Graham Jones, Mongrels.
It is so tough. I think it's tough to take an idea like werewolves or zombies or vampires and then still be able to come up with something, at least to me, and I'm sure to Rob, that is as original as Mongrels was.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think Steven does best is when he approaches a genre or a trope or something, he comes at it, I feel like, and this is me putting words in his mouth, I feel like he's not going to do it unless he can do something fresh and original. Or even transcend what's already been done within that particular, you know, whatever it happens to be.
And I'm gonna take that a step further, but then acknowledge everything that's been written about that subject too, because I've read stuff. Or a better example is, you know, like the TV show The Walking Dead, where they never use the word zombie. Yeah. Stephen Graham Jones writes a werewolf story from the standpoint of werewolves and doesn't make them rich and doesn't make them live in this commune of werewolves or whatever, but has financially broke migrant werewolves, but then acknowledges and addresses just about everything that's ever been written about the superstitions around them or things that hurt them or things they like to do, and either explains them or discounts them. You know what I mean? So he acknowledges everything that came before, even if it's just to disavow what it is, you know, and just done brilliantly.
Yeah. And exactly. And what that does is it tells you that when he's writing something that in your mind, you think, wow, this kind of steps in a different direction that I haven't seen before. Or, wow, this does something that I never expected from a werewolf story, or, you know, this really steps it up, or this changes the game. It's not that he's like, I can do better than this. It's like, I care so much about this that I want to give it something new.
Yeah. And that's why he is the booked favorite novel of the year for 2016.
Yeah. Amazing book. I'll never think about Stretch Pants the same way again. You'll have to read it or listen to our review to know what I'm talking about. But, definitely Mongrels novel of the year for booked, again, the 12 books we read, this is the best one.
That's right. So
I am willing to go on record as saying that I think that novella of the year should go to House at the Bottom of the Lake by Josh Malerman. If we were handing out titles.
If we're making it up as we go along, I'm with you on that 100%.
Sure. And of course we are, because that's what we do. Are we not going to do our worst books of the year? Do you want to skip that this year, or do you want to shit
up?
I like shitting on books.
All right, let's mention what actually came up as the worst book of the year. This is really no surprise.
All I'm going to say is we're not going to do the three because we don't have to shit on a bunch of books, but we did read the follow-up to the James Patterson book Zoo, creatively titled Zoo 2.
And that was the first Bookshot? No, what are they called? Bookshots?
Patterson's? I think it's Bookshot, yeah.
I think it's Bookshots, yeah. The first one, the sequel to Zoo, which collectively earned. This isn't even an average. This is if I add the two scores together and don't divide by two, still got a zero.
Or if you multiply them. Even if you multiply them.
Zero squared, cubed, I don't know, whatever. Bottom line, zero stars from both of us for just a terrible, terrible outing from James Patterson and the little name on the cover.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. We're shitting on your little novella, which you probably, even though it was like a 99-cent like Kindle single, probably just made him tons of money still, because the world is not fair. Just like 2016. 2016 gave us Zoo 2, Olivius.
Yeah, but unlike TV shows, it might be harder to determine, especially when you're talking about a super short book like that. Like we were talking about the OA, and I had said to you how reviews were mixed, and you said some things, and now because I have some faith in what you think, I might go ahead and watch it. Just think about that. Like a new Patterson drop, something with James Patterson's name, like you may not know it's awful until you've already bought it.
Yeah.
So you don't make that same investment a TV show, A, because it costs you nothing unless it's your $9.99 you pay to have HBO, or your $7.99 to just have Netflix. There's no actual financial investment in you clicking the button. Right. But with a book, you really don't find, can't find out it's terrible until you've started reading it. So that's what we're here to do, keep you guys from reading Zoo 3.
Yeah, we're based on the strength of the fact that we've given collectively Zoo 1 and 2 zero stars. Just don't even, if you see Zoo 3, if you see the Zoo TV show, just keep going. Just keep moving. Like we're going to do into 2017.
That's very great. Can I tell you though, before we get off, and this has nothing to do with the year, I had a bunch of time off of work the last 2 weeks. I have watched a ton of movies over the last 2 weeks. And can I make a recommendation for something that I also thought was fairly original in scope?
Of course. Yeah, please. It's not the Rocky Horror Picture Show, is it?
No, it's not. Although that was very original in scope and still continues to be, I guess, to this day. I watched a Korean film.
Everybody just shock and awe for that.
Yeah. Train to Busan, BUSAN, is probably the best reimagining of like a zombie tale that I have seen maybe since La Horde, the French zombie film that, you know, from, I don't know, whatever, 10 years ago or whatever it is. Totally worth watching. If you want to see somebody do zombies and actually have it be fun and exciting again, that's the direction you should go in.
Awesome.
Yep.
Very cool. Any other? So you said you watched a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I watched.
Anything you're embarrassed by?
No, not really. I finally got to see The Blair Witch, the sequel, the follow up to The Blair Witch Project.
Ooh.
Better than I expected. Some really intense moments in that movie.
Was it better than Book of Shadows, the one that they're not even acknowledging exists?
Yeah, I didn't even watch. I mean, I think I saw about 20 minutes of that and turned it off. That's how bad that was. This was pretty good. Eyes of My Mother, which was a probably, and Jesse Lawrence and I had this conversation online, and he kind of pushed back when I said it's probably the most disturbing movie I've ever seen. And he cited some movies that are pretty disturbing, but I'm going to hold on to this. Probably the most disturbing movie I've ever seen.
Wow. I know you've seen the Serbian film, so that's...
Well, and that's where it came up. So anybody who has seen the Serbian film who's going, oh, this guy must not have seen the Serbian film. I've seen the Serbian film. The reason that I don't think that's more disturbing than this is I pretty much don't take that movie seriously.
Hmm.
Like it was kind of like so out there, and it was just this kind of reason to be gory. You know, I think that it was all built around, for people who haven't seen the Serbian film, some of the foulest things you've ever seen happen in it. But really, it was an excuse to have these foul scenes with like a story built around it. And I've always thought that movie would be much better if that director would have reined it in by 20 or 30%. I thought he had an okay story. The problem was that the story was just clearly built around these just horrifying scenes. And when I say horrifying, I don't even know that they were delivered in a real horrifying way. They're just the kind of things you don't even want to talk out loud about. Eyes of My Mother had a genuinely disturbing story. And I don't think that the point of it was just to show gory, fucked up scenes, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Let's see. I saw that. I finally saw Ichi the Killer, and I was not impressed. Overall, it was not a bad movie. Lots of gore in it, but I just didn't. I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me. Ultimately, I don't think it was bad. It just didn't affect me in a positive way.
That was, what's his name, Hitashi Nikke, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Notorious. You still haven't seen Visitor Q, though, have you?
No, I haven't.
Oh, God. Visitor Q will stick with me for...
But that's the thing with Visitor Q. Is there an engaging story, or is it just an excuse to make scenes that are...
So, it's difficult for me to say, because I actually saw Visitor Q while I was at a party.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't... Like, first of all, I don't know if there was even sound. Second of all, I was simultaneously being distracted from the movie by the party and from the party by the movie. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's enough of like a cohesive narrative that it's like there is kind of like a beginning, middle, and end to it. But so many weird things happen. It's just so... I don't even know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else I saw. I watched another Korean movie called No Mercy, which was really, really good. And underrated. Like, this movie should be much bigger than it was, if that makes sense. Like, Jesse turned me on to it. I'd never heard of it. And after I watched it, I was like, why haven't I heard of this? Like, yeah. It is a really good movie. And you would think that... I'm not going to say I'm some type of expert on Korean cinema or anything, but the types of movies I'd like, you'd think this would have popped up on a bunch of like, oh, you like this, you'll like this list.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. I watched The Light Between Oceans, which is really kind of a chicky flick, but really dark. It's about, are you familiar at all with it?
Never even heard of it.
All right. It's about a, it takes place in like 1920, and it's about a guy who takes a gig, just needs a break. He was in the war and stuff. So he takes a gig as a lighthouse operator on this island where he has like live by himself. But in town, he meets a girl and they get married and they try to have kids, and she has two miscarriages. And then one day, a little dinghy boat washes up on their little island, and there's a dead man in it and a live baby. And they decide to keep the baby and not report it to anybody. That's kind of where the story kicks off. Yeah, it's not, I know I said that like, you know, like things happen. No, things happen. It's not a horror film or anything like that. It's a very serious film about the consequences of not doing the right thing.
Gotcha.
And that was okay. And then I watched all of ITV's Victoria, about Queen Victoria, their series. I watch a lot of
stuff. You've watched a lot of stuff, dude.
Oh, man, I gotta tell you. And I get the feeling I'm forgetting things, too.
So, that I watch. Can I spring something on you?
Sure.
If we had to do favorite of 2016 for movie and TV show, would you be able to come up with something?
It would take me a minute or two.
Me, too. I don't know why I even proposed that. Oh, I've got mine. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I see favorite movie. Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm going to take the lead on this one to give you a little time to ponder, because, and this might not be me thinking fully. This is on the fly. So if there's something amazing that I left out, you're going to have to forgive me. But, my favorite movie of 2016 actually technically came out in 2015. However, I saw it in 2016, and I think it had a theatrical release in 2016. A movie called Mr. Right that has Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick, of all people, in it. Have you heard of it at all?
You have mentioned it to me. That's the only place I've ever heard it is from you.
That's the thing, and that's the reason I think that it's my favorite, is because I looked at the box office gross for this movie, and I couldn't find a budget or an estimated budget for the movie, but I saw the box office gross and the domestic gross, because there was no foreign distribution of this to date since its theatrical release, which was like at the very earliest or at the latest, like May of this year. Its theatrical gross overall was under $35,000.
Wow.
Which is beyond a failure. It has to have, on the talent alone for having Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick in it, I'm guessing between $5 and $10 million just to make the movie. So it was a complete failure. It was like an abject failure. But it's such an entertaining movie. Like, basically, Sam Rockwell is a hitman who grows a conscience and kills the people who hire him to kill people. And Anna Kendrick is this really messed up, kind of goofy girl, and they meet each other and they fall in love, and it's a love story, but like there's a lot of murder going on, and they're just really, really weird people, and it's an entertaining movie. I loved it, and I've watched it probably like 8 times this year because I just thought it was such a great story. But it failed. It fell so fucking hard, and I don't know why.
So here's some information on this movie. The box office, according to wherever Google auto pulls the information from.
Yeah.
$397,903.
Really?
Yeah. IMDb has it at 6.3 out of 10. which is not bad. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 41%, which is not good. And Roger Ebert gave it 1.5 out of 4 stars.
It's an excellent movie. So I looked on Box Office Mojo, and that has the domestic total gross at $34,694.
This might be worldwide. I don't know. You know how when you search on Google, it just it'll pull up like the picture and like where you can watch it, like on which video on demand services. Yeah. So I don't know where they pull their info from. But this is just the front page stuff. It's on HBO, like all this week, like every night. So if you want to catch a Rob's favorite movie of the year,
it's so entertaining, and it's like it's weirdly empowering for the female character. Anna Kendrick's character is like a strong female character, so but like not in a way where it's like we are feminism hitting you in the face. We're not throwing our burning bras at you or anything. It's just like it's a well written. It was written by Max Landis, who did Chronicle, the movie Chronicle, if you want a little context.
Chronicle, was that...
Where the kids get superpowers, and they can like move shit with their minds and stuff.
That movie was great, by the way.
Yeah.
I really liked that movie a lot. I was getting that confused with Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, there's no Vin Diesel anywhere near either of these movies. Yeah,
which I was like, I don't see how you're selling stuff to anybody by talking about that. But Chronicle was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, if I had to pick one movie, that's tough. I'm telling you, this Train to Busan, and I know it's partially because it's really fresh on my brain.
It's totally fresh in your mind.
But I was really, really impressed. I was really impressed by this movie.
Yeah. Good. There's our recommendations for 2016. Yep. TV show, I know mine. Do you know yours?
You know, I'm going to go with new TV show for this year. So, I mean, there are TV shows that I've been watching for years that, you know, continue on. So I'm going to go with Designated Survivor. I've really been enjoying that a lot. That's the Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, that's you have some weird Kiefer Sutherland boner that I don't understand.
I love Kiefer Sutherland. I've loved him since Lost Boys. Back in my youth when I wanted to be him and his character in Lost Boys when I grew up. That being said, I think that show's pretty engaging and deals with a lot of today's issues. So very current stuff happening on that show.
Westworld. Mic drop right there. Westworld, a fucking marvel of a TV show. It's such a good TV show. Absolutely my best, my favorite TV show of 2016.
Yeah, but from what I understand, there were some problems with the guns in that.
Wow, you remember that part of our Holiday Office party. Good for you.
I only remember it from listening to it a second time.
We're just raging about Keaton and the guns.
Yeah, so
such a good show. Like, if you're into writing and, like, multiple layers of narrative and, like, the kind of thing where it's like it's almost like a puzzle that you have to figure out, and it reveals itself over time. Such an amazing show, and lots of boobs.
Yeah, but they're we're not gonna go into.
Yeah, no, we already go back one episode and listen to Olivia's complaint boobs. About the boobs.
They don't count their robot boobs. All right, looking forward to 2017, Rob. What are you looking forward to in 2017?
I am definitely looking forward to StokerCon.
Are we in?
We're in, as far as I'm aware. We haven't made any... So here's where we're at. I'm in. I've already committed myself to paying for a place to stay. So I'm in. I'm going. And Livius is going too, based on the fact that, like... So it's kind of a weird situation. There's some behind-the-scenes stuff where, like, we want some things to happen, but we're not going to know about those things until it's, like, way at the last minute. So it's like, do we book everything now, assuming that's going to happen, or do we wait and see? I'm saying we book everything now, and we commit ourselves to being there, because even if that stuff falls through, it's still going to be an event that everybody can get together at. But StokerCon 2017 is in Los Angeles on the Queen Mary, and we're going to be sitting very nearby in Belmont Shore, I think is the name of the little area. It's right on the beach. It's going to be very nice.
That was part Rob telling you what's happening, part him convincing me that that's the right thing to do. I don't know if anybody else caught that.
So Livia's is going to find any reason to back out of this. I've told him like 2 weeks ago, I'm like, we just need to pay for plane tickets now. Because it'll be cheaper maybe, but also you won't be able to back out.
It's very, very true.
Yeah.
2017, I mentioned it earlier, but I was really excited. I was talking about this to someone earlier. It's going to be our sixth year. Like, we're going to celebrate our sixth anniversary in just 4 months. So very excited about that.
Yeah.
6 years. Those, yeah.
Yeah. That, so like
when we, most marriages,
that's what I was going to say. Like when we celebrate our 6 years, that is going to equal the longest relationship I've been in my entire life.
There you go. Yeah. So it's like Rob and I are almost common law married now.
We're common law. Yeah, exactly. Celebrities, whatever.
Common law podcasters. I don't know. For those of you at certain Patreon tiers, you have most assuredly received your limited edition 2016 mug. There will be a limited edition 2017 mug. There will be a mug available for purchase soon that will be for available for everybody. All we have to do is kind of tidy up some things on the website that we're using for that. T-shirts. There are T-shirts forthcoming. There will be some limited edition T-shirts available only for Patreon subscribers at certain levels. We'll see. We're kind of working that out. We're terrible at selling our merchandise, just like we're terrible at selling ourselves, which is why we're still doing this and no one's paying us to do this.
Yeah. So hopefully, the next thing I'm going to mention is going to bring us to the level where we're going to have T-shirts for everybody, the 2017 limited T-shirts. Just to be clear, the 2016 design that happened on the mugs, that's done. It's over. If you see a picture online and you're like, man, I really want one of those. Yeah, you should have thought about that when we were making the 2016 mugs.
Or offer $25 to somebody who has it. I'm sure they'll be happy to sell it to you and drink out of a non-booked mug. Because I've got one. If anybody wants to spend some money, I've got one.
Yeah, I've got one too, actually, now that I think about it. But talking about selling this ourselves.
I was just talking to somebody. I was talking to somebody at a shop that gives away T-shirts occasionally to its patrons and stuff. And I had said something about, I was being funny, and the young lady that works there says, oh, that's a really nice shirt. Where'd you get it? And I said, oh, is that the Salvation Army? There's a whole rack of these for like 25 cents each. I said, I'm using them to like wash my car, you know. But then I was relaying to her the story about how one of our signed anthologies ended up in Australia. And I was like, yeah, if you give people shit for free, they will sell it. That's how it works. So I am currently on eBay trying to see if there is a book 2016 mug available for sale, because I know the address of everybody that those went out to. apparently, Ellen DeGeneres does a 12 Days of Christmas where she gives away like cool stuff to her audience members.
Yeah.
And I guess she got tipped off to people who were selling her stuff on Craigslist, like that they got. So they were sending out production crews to people's homes and being like, hey, why are you selling the stuff that Ellen gave you?
That's hilarious.
Like, she could totally be on this podcast if she wanted, because that totally sounds like something I would do if I had the resources to do it. So, Ellen DeGeneres, if you're listening and you want a part-time gig on a book review podcast, we got you. We'll kick Amanda Gowan off the holiday episodes like that.
Yeah, yeah. Although I don't think you can see dancing on a podcast, and I think she does some good dancing.
She might do some good dancing. I'm not that familiar.
Final thing that I think that we're definitely been talking about, it came up earlier, was doing some more Patreon contributor rewards. So, for example, holiday episodes that are available on Patreon but not in the normal podcast feed. I thought I had another idea, and I forgot it, but I think I have another idea that I'm going to pitch to Livius as well. So hopefully more things that are available for our Patreon contributors at a lower level, so that you don't have to break the bank in order to do something fun and get something cool from us, like exclusive content or exclusive merchandise. So hopefully we'll be seeing a little bit of a diversification of our Patreon to entice some new people, or just to get the people that have been giving us money a little bit something more for what they're doing for us.
I'm also going to predict the return of Booked Live.
Oh, I was like, he's going to say Wheel of Meat. He's going to say Wheel of Meat.
No. We'll definitely have the Wheel of Meat.
God damn it.
I'm predicting the return of Booked Live. So
Booked Live was amazing.
Yeah, I think we're going to do that again, probably sooner rather than later. So all cool stuff that will be coming up in 2017. thank you so much for listening, because if it wasn't for you guys listening, we wouldn't be doing this. And I'd be reading more books, but I really don't know what I'd be doing if I wasn't doing this. So I appreciate you guys. And Rob, I appreciate you for all the hard work you put in.
Well, I appreciate you, buddy. Like, you make the decisions and make the calendar thing happen. I just click the keys on the keyboard.
Excellent. I feel like I should sing that old Lang Syne or whatever, but I don't know what the words are. I could just throw them.
We're not going to do that. I'm not down for that. So it was everybody thinks it was a tragic 2016. But looking back at it, we read some excellent stuff. We had some absolutely hilarious and awesome holiday episodes, great interviews. We interviewed that fucking guy from Welcome to Night Vale, who's had like 100 million downloads. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, if you're ever going to have someone who has 100 million downloads as a guest on your podcast, you're not going to see any bump in your downloads. I just want to let you know that right now.
Yeah. So if you're an aspiring podcaster and you think that's going to do it for you.
Now you get Chris Hardwick on your podcast. Guess what? The same people are listening that they were before. Just want to let you know that right now.
That's very true. Disappointing moments in 2016.
The death of, our hope.
Yeah. Can I tell you too, though, that Alice Isn't Dead is a fantastic podcast. If you haven't listened, that was the second podcast that they did.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's that other one that I found that to be not my style, so much so that I didn't quite make it through one episode. I don't even remember what that one's called.
I'll have to check it out. I think, are we done? Are we going to?
Yeah, sure. I don't think anyone's listening anymore. We do what we want.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us in 2016. Hopefully we'll see you more frequently, because we only did 46 episodes. I don't know how that happened. We're traveling all the time. I think that's our excuse for that. And B, hopefully we'll be bringing you at least a minor, if not significant, increase in the number of books that we're reviewing in 2017, bouncing back to our former level of reading and everything like that. Thanks so much for supporting us on Patreon if you did that, or just supporting us by listening and interacting with us on social media. We love you all. We like each other, and hopefully we'll see you a lot more in 2017. Until next year, I'm Rob Olson.
And I'm Livia Snedden. Happy New Year.